I'm just like jittery all day. I'm fucking cold turkey again.
Good day, folks.
Good day.
Good day, and welcome to another Forgeside Chat, a podcast about blacksmithing, bladesmithing, and everything in between, with a heavy focus on talent in the Great White North.
Are you talking about Canada?
Yeah, buddy!
Yeah, you are? Awesome!
I'm stoked! We got Justin back in the house! How you doing, bro?
Welcome, welcome. Hello, hello. Why am I saying welcome, welcome? I'm thrown off.
You forgot happy how this is done, here. Eh?
Yeah, totally. Totally. All right. Today in the hot seat, we've got Mike Palmer, and he can be found on Instagram at Mike's Metalworking. And man, I just dug through his account. There's some interesting shit on there. I've got like a bunch of notes, so we're going to grill them, but just a little. We'll have fun.
Bring it on.
Just here to chat.
Ready.
Awesome. Look at you, smart, awesome, making noise. I did not make notes, dude. I just wing shit, man. That seems to work for
you
me.
You know,
so.
Yeah. Go for
you
it.
Do well, so.
Occasionally, eh?
Occasionally.
Brian House and the boys were actually joking about that on one of the latest episodes about how Lando's got shop ADD. I start one thing, but I never really finish. I just like, oh, I'll start this. Oh, wait, I'll start this. Oh, start this. It's like a freaking scroll that sees nuts type thing, eh?
Oh, yeah.
S-A-D-D.
I've been there too.
That's sad. Shop yeah, ADD. Well,
you know what? It works out in the long run. I still get shit done. And
oh, yeah.
Get lots of shit
flowers?
Done. All at once.
Your roses.
Coming along, eh? It's coming along, eh?
Beautiful.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, no, I want to get that process down and start making, like, I'd like to make displays with multiple roses in them for, like, gates and stuff like that, right? Like, a lot of these guys are just doing, like, singular roses or maybe rose bouquets and then selling them as that.
Yeah.
I think it's cool and all. There's nothing wrong with doing that. I'll still sell a singular rose if it comes down to it, but I'd really like to see, like, look at Eric Strauss, man. That's a guy that I always fall back on. I've brought him up multiple times on this show. The dude is a phenomenal, phenomenal artistic blacksmith. And when I look at the sculptures he does, the large displays of different flowers and leaves and acorns, I'm just like, oh, buddy. Oh, yes, yes.
You're
teach me.
Touching him in all the right ways.
Yeah. Well, stroking me in all the right ways.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
That's
our dude. That's a Tragically Hip reference. That's
I did not know that.
Gord Downie live at the Misty Moon in the Maritimes. Enjoying your smokes and your beers, are you, folks? Eh? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Eh. What about you, dude? Like, okay, how's the series thing going, dude? The filming, the show.
Oh.
Getting
well,
there?
I'm do you really want to get into this?
Well,
we're here for Mike, but I you know, I'll do the
quick
rundown
quick.
Of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So I submitted my rough cut. So if you're not aware, maybe your first time listener, I'm Justin Lamoureux of Rainy Day Forge, and that was Lyndon of Abstract Blacksmith, and Mike, like I said, it's at Mike's_metalworking. And I also run Fire Slice TV, which is just a three-part series. Just a three-part series.
Just.
It's been consuming all my time since September, mid-August.
Definitely not taking just a tip.
No, God, no. No, full bore, man. So about 3 weeks ago, November 1st, I submitted my rough cut to the executive, the guy that evaluates and whatnot. He signs the checks. Well, he doesn't sign the checks, but whatever.
His boss does.
Yeah, exactly.
Somewhere up that chain.
Yeah, yeah. He's the next guy in command for me. So send him the rough cuts and he gets back to me, hey, you know, it might be easier if we just talk over the phone, and I was like, hey, that's fine. I was stoked on the project. I should have seen the warning signs with that. So we talk on the Monday or the whatever, the after the weekend, and he's like, all right, you sitting down, you got papers to take some notes? And I was like, oh fuck. Oh no. But you know, I took a page of notes, all like stuff that honestly, if I would be working with a partner, that we probably would have talked about, hashed out, and corrected ahead of time. I was just, I don't know, I was at my wit's end by that point. I was just trying to make that deadline to submit the rough cuts. So that was done. And then he gave me a bunch of feedback, and it was kind of back to the drawing board, fixing up some shots that were a little soft or poorly lit. And had to do like an intro where I didn't really have one before. So it was like all these things that structurally he was like, you should have something like this or whatever. And I was like, okay, hang on. So I took a few days off, worked on my press, worked in the shop a little bit, and then went back to it. And now I'm about, I want to say 90% done. So I'm on that home stretch again, sort of. So hopefully this time when I submit, there's just like small details to correct. So we'll see.
Your press is running good now?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I pressed out some 1-inch ball bearings during the series to make these knives. And then I refilmed it because they were kind of out of focus. And that was post press construction or like just reinforcement. And yeah, it squeezed those balls even better.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I like. Yes.
Success.
Beauty. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. So very, very stoked on that. And like, yeah, I've got another, like, I'm hoping by Friday, and we're Wednesday right now, I could submit my rough cuts again and then probably get some more feedback. And maybe by the end of next week, I'll be done. God, I hope so. Dude, like, I went to like a month of like making these knives and filming them and like skipping meals and eating and like just straight work, and then to a month and or 2 months of just sitting in my office and like,
oh, God,
eating Halloween candy. It was my wife's birthday, and my mother-in-law brought her like this huge box of chocolates, and I was like, oh.
That's a good use.
I have no willpower for that kind of stuff. It just can't be in those.
Me and you are so alike, dude.
Oh, that. Oh, love you guys.
Oh, I love you too, brother. I gotta say, man, it's very nice having you back in the hot seat. I have been absolutely falling in love with Nick Verbray. He is beyond an awesome dude, and having him work with us is amazing. And having you back in between, like, you've hopped on once before, like, for what was it, like half an hour or so back when Steve was there too. And it's just like all these little changes, there's a little something to deal with here and there, might be a little bit much, but in the long run, it's just like, I'm happy, man. Things are working out. It's good.
I'm cool to do every now and then, that's for sure. Like, with this project ending, like,
fuck yeah.
Maybe not every week, but yeah, every now and then.
Maybe get all three of us on together even.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, throw Steve in there and create a dumpster fire out of the whole show. Sorry, Steve. There's nothing but love for you, brother. He actually just helped me out. I needed an image rendered for my logo. I drew out my logo, like, just a super basic. It's pretty much my touch mark. And I was like, dude, I drew it out. And I'm like, I suck at this stuff. Like, I don't know.
So he digitized it?
Yeah, he drew just tried to take all the drawn lines and just added paint over top of it with the marker app, I think. Honestly, it's like, that looked like it was way too easy, and I probably should have just tried that myself. Fuck. I'm a lazy bastard.
You know, Fiverr is a good one. It's just
that's what he used. Website.
He used Fiverr?
Yeah. That's what he told me he used. I just used Fiverr. It was super easy.
So then he paid for that. You know that. That's a really? Paid service. Yeah.
He told me it was free. Uh-oh.
Not if you use Fiverr. Fiverr's like...
Yeah, I don't think Fiverr's free. I think you got to pay.
No.
Every time?
The basis of Fiverr is like... $5 jobs, right? So it's like you'll digitize this for $5, and maybe like it's $5 for every 10 minutes or $5 an hour or whatever. That's how it kind of started off as, I think. Now it's based on whatever they want. But I got my logo digitized to do stitching for like hats. So a stitching machine on there. And I think it cost me like $10.
That's not bad at all.
Not at all. Yeah.
I'm mistaken. He did not tell me he used Fiverr. He recommended Fiverr for future reference if I ever want something done real quick, cheap. But he told me he uses a program called Sketchbook.
Oh, all right.
Interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was
Mike's
really
in
nice.
House.
Mike Palmer, Mike's where are you out house. Of, dude? Michigan, right?
I'm actually out of the suburbs right outside of Chicago.
Oh, sweet.
So good old Illinois. Probably going to be moving out to Oregon sometime within the next year, hopefully.
Oh,
which I am
nice.
Very excited about. So I'll be a little bit closer up to Canada. So, you know.
Chicago is kind of like the Winnipeg of the U.S. from my understanding. Like,
the interesting thing is I've heard that Chicago is like the Toronto of America, I guess.
Okay.
Cities are quite similar in a lot of ways.
Hmm. Well, you don't really hear Toronto being heralded for being like a place where you go to get stabbed and shot, whereas Winnipeg tend to has that. Yeah, and that's what I hear about Chicago more often than not. This is a place to go if you want to get shot.
Chicago's weird. It's like pretty much it's divided up into thirds. Like the north side, it's like
nice.
The north side, it's super affluent in a lot of places. Lots of restaurants, bars, like. Basically, just any place you want to go out and hang out with friends and, you know, hang out with people, it's got it. It's really nice. And then towards the south side of Chicago, that is where a lot of those stories about people getting like shot and stabbed, unfortunately, occur. And the west side is kind of a little bit of in between. I haven't really grown up too much in Chicago. I've always been a little bit on the outside, but I guess that would be a decent overview of the geographical distribution of crime in the Chicagoland area.
Chicago sits right on Lake Michigan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that like I've been down Lake Michigan before throughout the sand dunes and everything. Oh, yeah, buddy. That is.
Yeah, I grew up, I think, maybe in certain places, maybe like 15 minutes away from the beach.
Cool, dude.
Yeah. Lovely. It was really awesome because, yeah, when I was a kid, we'd always just like hang out at the lake and stuff. And then it was like a mini ocean. You know, it's a pretty cool little culture all up around like Lake Michigan and stuff. There's little like touristy towns that folks go to, you know, you rent like summer houses, and that's how a lot of those places actually, they support themselves and they make a lot of money just based off like, summer lake tourists.
Yeah, for sure. I could see that, man. That's what it seemed like to me. Like, we were down there in the summertime and it was like tourist central for sure. And had this definitely had this vibe to it that like everybody's there, they're happy, they're there for a good reason. They're not just there to live life and work or whatever. They're there to have a good time.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. I like those. I like those little areas.
Did you ever experience the squeaky sand on the beaches of Lake Michigan?
Squeaky sand.
When I was there, the craziest shit, we were running down to the beach and we would like jump and slide in the sand, right? And the sand went as you would jump and slide in the sand. It was like, what the fuck? And the first time we were like, what the hell was that? And then we just were doing it like crazy. We're running and sliding in the sand to make the sand squeak. We're like, let's take a buck of this shit home. We took a buck of it home. Nah, it doesn't squeak no more.
That's very strange. No, I've never had that happen to me before, but I'd probably freak the fuck out a little bit too if I was on some squeaky sand. So
I feel you, man. What else were you on? Was it just squeaky sand, Lyndon?
I was like 14, dude. It was just squeaky sand.
It was just squeaky sand.
Yeah. Tell me about it. It was interesting. But interesting stuff. Let's dive into the freaking interesting stuff. Metal.
Yeah.
We brought Mike on because Mike is playing with Metallurgy big time right now. He's doing all sorts of different mixes with copper and bronze, and it is fucking cool shit. And you're in school for this right now, aren't you?
Yeah. So I'm actually finishing up just my regular bachelor's in chemistry right now. I'll be graduating in 3 weeks. So that's pretty exciting.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. Thank you. But yeah, so I'm just studying general chemistry, and I guess I better just tell the story of how I got into this because...
Please, if you don't mind.
Yeah, not at all, man. I actually used to, just kind of as like a hobby, I used to make knives like you guys, just stock removal and stuff. And I was looking at some of this stuff called aluminum bronze, and it has this beautiful golden color. So, you know, I decided, I was like, hey, man, I want a cool gold knife. I'll make one myself since no one was really selling any. And I looked at the price of the bronze, and it was about, I think... 60 or 70 American dollars for a pound.
Oh, and Jesus.
Well,
I mean, a pound of aluminum is a little, not a little tiny piece because aluminum is light, right? But this isn't just aluminum. This is brass aluminum.
Yeah. So it's bronze. Aluminum bronze. It's bronze. Aluminum bronze, roughly, just to backtrack a little bit, is primarily a binary alloy of copper and aluminum. Roughly about 10% aluminum to 90% copper, in like the most basic sense, but there's lots of other modifications that you can add to it. One of the most common types is something called nickel aluminum bronze, and it's like really tough. It's really hard. It's really strong, very corrosion resistant, and it's actually used on like giant like naval warship propellers.
Oh, cool.
Oh, boy.
Big propellers that are like the size of a fucking house. Like that's what they make the stuff out of. Wow. So it's... pretty remarkable. And so I bought some, and it was like 70 bucks for a pound, and it's about the same density as steel, roughly, maybe a little bit less. So it's definitely some pricey stuff,
right? Yeah.
And I was looking at it, and I was just like, man, like I looked up the chemistry, and I was like, hey, like I'm a chemist, I'm being, you know, trained for this in school. The ingredients are far different than anything I've worked with in classes before, but the process is the same. So I weighed out all the ingredients, got a super sketchy, like charcoal powered furnace. I hooked up a fucking leaf blower to it and was just blasting air in there. You had to use like 10 pounds of charcoal to melt like a single pound of metal, but it worked. And I was like, man, this is great. It kind of feels like you're doing alchemy when you're working.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. And it's like, you take all these elements, like, copper from copper pipes and aluminum from soda cans when I was starting off, combined with like little tiny pinches of like a couple nails, iron nails here and there to adjust the chemistry. You throw all of them together, and with heat and time and effort, you can transform these kind of almost useless objects into something that's different than all of the constituent components and is also beautiful. And I just kind of fell in love with it. Like the science, art, put together, it's like a perfect mixture, and there's something really special about it that I can't really describe, but I absolutely love it. And
this guy's gonna give me a vocabulary boner, man. Almost made him spit his water.
I've been told that I kind of talk like someone who was born in the 1800s and then time traveled and then became a stoner. So you guys are definitely gonna get some good vocab words. I'll try my best to throw in some fun stuff.
Nice.
I have a lot of fun science vocab words on my little sheet here that I can make sure to go into and explain to.
Refer to. He's got notes. Oh no!
I need to go get my rag, you guys. I'll be right back.
But yeah, and then after I made the
sorry. Yeah, too far. Oh my God. Sorry, Mike.
No, it's okay. No worries, man. But yeah, basically the end of the story was after I figured out that I could do this, and me being a tiny bit of a cheap bastard, I was like, wow, I can do this for so much cheaper. So I started just making all the types of bronze on my own for making knives just for fun. And then I started looking at all the different bronze alloys that were available, and I started noticing little tiny patterns in them with how much of, for just for aluminum bronze, for example, like how much iron was added, how much nickel was added. And I looked at a bunch of those, and from those relationships, I actually started experimenting with my own compositions of different copper alloys for various purposes. The first thing that I really wanted to try and do was to try to make a type of bronze that worked really well for holding an edge so you could make knives out of it. And I've kind of hit a wall with that, as the hardest that I can get it with my current equipment is, I mean, it's impressive for a bronze, but compared to steel or even like beryllium copper, which is another alloy that's commonly used in industry, it's very strong, extremely corrosion resistant, and it's kind of on par.
But I got some questions for you about beryllium, buddy.
Yeah, I can get back into beryllium copper. That was one of my notes. I didn't want to get ahead of myself, but yeah, well, sorry.
So yeah, the comparison, right? Yeah, it's
how hard did you get your brass or bronze?
Yeah, so it's like it's almost there. But one thing that I think could improve it is I found this very interesting patent from a company in China detailing how they added about 3% titanium into copper. And this titanium copper, it has incredible properties. It's stronger than beryllium copper in every single type of statistic that they tested. It's also non-toxic, which is what we're going to mention. Yeah, and I have a little bit on here.
Beryllium's scary shit, dude.
Dude, beryllium is so nasty. I did a little bit of study on like berylliosis because I was like, why is this so bad to melt? And I looked it up and I was like, dude, like that's straight fucked. Like you get like granules in your lungs. It's real nasty stuff, man.
How does that happen from like contact or like
inhalation of fumes?
Human inhalation.
Just processing beryllium in general, when it's broken down, it can release fumes, and these fumes are incredibly toxic. So when folks like, unfortunately, in a lot of like second and third world countries that are dealing with beryllium processing, they don't have the equipment and everything, so they breathe in the beryllium fumes, and it creates a disease called berylliosis. And you can look it up. It's real nasty. I won't get into it, but 10 out of 10 people would not recommend it. That's all I can say on that.
There might be an extra person who'll jump in there from the sidelines and be like, no, really?
Yeah, so yeah.
Listen to those 10 guys. I'm telling you, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Like, from my understanding, within North America or anywhere that's kind of on the higher scale of industrialization at this point, this is laboratory shit. Like, you're not playing with beryllium unless you're in a full suited, like freaking radiation suit. And then you're going through multiple doors into a laboratory to process it so that it can't escape the lab as well.
Yeah, it's really crazy stuff. And, that's why I'm so excited about this, this titanium copper discovery. A company in China has already sort of made it, but they're not really doing much of anything with it. And the really cool thing is, since you guys are our knife makers and are familiar, I'm guessing, with the Rockwell C hardness scale, the HRCs and everything.
Right.
This type of bronze can actually reach at hardest 40 HRC.
Okay.
And yeah, compared to nickel aluminum bronze, I think the hardest it can get is about 25 HRC.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So it's some pretty crazy stuff. And the reason I bring it up is I'm planning to get something called an inert atmosphere induction furnace.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a machine that uses electrical currents to heat up metal, basically. And I'm going to be using an argon atmosphere to cover up the metal so that it doesn't react with any oxygen while melting. so that I'll be able to experiment with adding titanium to copper to be able to produce this titanium copper at home, and perhaps tweak the formula a little bit so it's not a direct copy of what the folks in China did. And I do have some ideas on that already, but I'll have to save that for later.
Hold that.
For sure. Can't reveal all the secrets. It's like a giant TIG welder, pretty much, this machine you're talking about, the Forge.
Yeah, it's like a big copper coil, and you stick a crucible in there, and you turn it on, and the electric currents will actually hit, I think this is how it works, but it causes the molecules to start to vibrate faster and faster and faster, which translates into heat, and then once it gets hot enough, it just kind of... Blurps.
Yeah, the induction forge is something that a lot of people are starting to jump into, but the inert gas side of things is what really changes it for you, is having that inert gas. Now, is that contained within some sort of, you know, container of some sort? Yeah, I don't know the wrong word for it, but like what holds the gas over the crucible?
So the really interesting thing is, since argon is actually more dense than air, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to get a funnel. I'll have to find a material that can deal with the heat, maybe some type of I might have to get a steel funnel or something. I'll figure it out. But so I'll put it over the top of the crucible, and then I'll be like, this is the crucible, and then I'll be like sending the argon at a gentle stream so that the heavy argon will flow in there
to take
place,
replace the oxygen.
TIG welder. The TIG welder.
Yeah.
It's just a giant TIG welder. That's all it is. Fuck. So if you took another crucible and drilled a hole through the bottom of it to create your argon cup, that would be able to withstand the heat really well.
Yeah.
And it would match the other crucible. You wouldn't have to worry about, you know, moving it around to try to just perfectly match up and send the gas in.
Pop it right on top, turn on the argon, good to go.
Yeah.
And
I wonder what kind of CFM you're going to have to run for something like that, because that's like, what size of crucible are you using? Probably something like a 3-inch interior like opening?
I think actually a little bit smaller than that. I'd probably be using, at least for like some of the test alloys, I'd probably be using like less than a 1 kilogram size crucible. So probably only 250 gram ingots at most to do some of the testing with. And then perhaps going forward, the cool thing about induction furnaces is you can adjust the size of the coil. So if I wanted to, eventually someday I could get just a big ass coil and fit like a crucible that can hold like 2 kilos of metal or something like that, and just pour up just huge ingots of crazy, crazy alloys.
This is for Nick, your weekly shout out, Clearon Forge, Terry Cash. If you need to get yourself some coils, hit up Clearon Forge. He's making them, dude. So you can talk to Terry at Clearon Forge, and he'll get you exactly the coil you want for your specific process.
Let's go. Yeah. One of my good friends that I worked with in the lab over the summer, dude's an absolute whiz with electronics and technology. And just for shits and giggles last year, he just built an induction furnace setup.
Oh,
he doesn't use it anymore. And so he's like, bro, like I don't like need this anymore. You said you were trying to buy one. Do you just want to buy this one? And I'm like, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
Perfect. And so I'm gonna be getting it for him, from him, and he's working on it right now, and it should be ready sometime within the next month, if all goes well. So I'll have that pretty soon. So that's some very exciting stuff.
The materials that you're making, like I was on your Instagram and I saw silicon red brass, tin sleaze, celestial brass, L-site silicon copper, and felicitum. I probably pronounced half of those wrong, but.
No, they were all right, except for the tinsel one. It's kind of hard to say. It's like tinsel, but tinsel.
Okay.
I guess tinsel.
Okay, not a tin sleaze, but tinsel.
Tin sleaze.
Tin sleaze. You're making all these materials. Do they all have a different application? Mm-hmm. Are they just for like aesthetic reasons? And what do you do with them?
All right. So all of them have different purposes. Some of them, like the silicon red brass and tinsel, or those two are specifically aesthetic alloys. They look really gorgeous when you shine them up, and with the inclusion of the silicon that's in both of them, it lends to being able to machine it really well. Like, it's not going to gum up a lathe. It's going to be able to hold a really nice mirror polish. And in addition to that, with adding silicon, it changes up some of the casting properties. So if someone were to buy an ingot and then melt it down themselves and then cast it into something, the chemistry of the metal would lend itself to pouring very cleanly and not producing very much slag.
Nice.
Dude, my fucking mind just exploded.
Uh-oh.
I'm just getting
So it was
started
a vocabulary boner, and now a
now.
mind exploding.
I still have the vocabulary thing going on, trust me. Do you know who Dakota Wilson is?
Dakota Wilson.
Dakota
Oh yeah, I do know
Wilson
Dakota Wilson. Yeah,
works
give me a
directly with
second.
Coy Baker, right?
Yeah, the dude has the most just fucking amazing knives. Like, literally, like, I open up Instagram sometimes and I see like the newest thing he comes up with, and like literally have to like double
Beautiful.
take my glasses off. Like, bro,
Yeah, there's
what?
only a few guys that fall into the same category as him from what I'm seeing, and it's some wicked awesome stuff. It's interestingly enough, Bonifab up in Toronto, he's actually doing like really amazing stuff, but because he's not 100% knives, he kind of falls out of the radar on that kind of stuff a little bit. But I hold him equally equivalent to Dakota Wilson knives. Like he knows what he's doing when it comes to the patterns and layering everything and getting the colors right and stuff like that. But you're mentioning these these different alloys, and I'm just like thinking to myself and how the color on them transcribes. And one of the things that really pops, why I brought up Dakota Wilson, is the red in his knives. He gets that
Yeah.
red copper, and it's like, is that? You got any explanation for us on that,
Is
dude?
that silicon
Oh
red
my
That's
God.
what I'm like, dude, is that
I
just a
think
different alloy?
so. I think it actually is pure copper. And I've talked a little bit with Dakota about this, and I'm actually pretty stumped. I'm not sure how he does it. If I had to guess, it would involve perhaps quenching the knife in a solution with borax, because that's one way that you can get copper to turn red, is if you heat it red hot and then quench it in a water solution filled with a bunch of borax. But the problem with that is that it's mixed in with the steel, and water quenching those Damascus blades, water
No
quenching them is
bueno.
not a good idea. So
Unless it was a
maybe.
water, what if it was a water quenching steel that was mixed with the copper?
That is entirely possible. That might be how he does it. But most likely, I would say it's some type of patina compound. I've seen that this stuff called liver of sulfur or sodium sulfide can be used to turn copper red, but it's never that beautiful crimson that Dakota gets. I'm
Right,
not really sure how he does it. But hey, props to him, man. It's fucking gorgeous.
Fuck yeah. Shoot. I was hoping to break the code.
So was I.
I did think of something that is a it's like a slight imitation of it. It's not quite as red, but there was one day I was outside, and like many days, I'm getting bored waiting for the forge to heat up and everything. So I heated up a piece of copper till it was orange hot, and then dropped it in a dish of oil, and it made a big fireball, obviously, which is what I was, kind of hoping, because why not? It's fun. And I pulled it out, and interestingly enough, the piece of copper was this beautiful dull red color. Not quite that nice crimson that Dakota has, but it's like a very almost maybe like a little bit darker than this sweatshirt that I'm wearing right here. It was a really unique color. Never seen anything like it before, but since it's an oil quench, I figured that if someone had like a copper mascus or a CU-MY blade or something like that, if they were to quench it in oil, perhaps that red color could come through, maybe. So hopefully that works for you guys out there, if
It's
anyone's.
what happens when you're making a blade like that is you're going to be sanding on it, grinding on it after the quench. So
that's kind of where I'm like, how
it must be some patinaing agent of sorts.
Yeah,
or
that's what I think in the steel is
that only affects that specific layer, that one specific layer of copper, because it looks like he'll get layers that aren't affected.
Well, you think of like regular Damascus, if you're etching in ferric chloride, your 1084 is gonna get consumed. It's gonna like eat away and have like that.
Right, but it'll consume all of the 1084. Whereas like on Dakota's knives, I've seen what looks like there's copper that's been affected by this reddening process, as well as copper that wasn't affected by it on the same blade.
Dude,
and it's like
that's brass. You can have brass. You can have
that's
nickel.
Okay,
and
that
you can have copper.
That makes sense.
And I'd imagine you could probably throw in some silicon red brass.
You most certainly could. I've actually sent one of my alloys, it's called Elsite, to Coy Baker a couple months ago, but unfortunately he's been super busy, so he hasn't had a chance to try laminating it. But you know, I'm really looking forward to whenever he gets to try that. And Elsite, it's pretty cool stuff. I just recently did a test on it where I made a quarter inch piece of it and sent it to a buddy to get it shot at with various calibers of guns. And I chose a quarter inch because that's about the same thickness that modern steel body armor is. And this Elsite stuff that I've invented, man, it's super tough. It's super hard for a bronze, and it feels damn near indestructible from some of the tests that I've done on it. So I got a quarter inch piece, same thickness as a bulletproof like steel shield, and had a guy shoot at it with a couple rounds. It was able to very easily deflect a 22 and 9mm. But a 223 and a 3030 were able to punch through it. But, you know, it's still, but being able to deflect a 9mm and not really take much of a bow on the back at only a quarter inch thick is pretty damn impressive. So I've been talking to another fella who makes his own ammo. So he'll have like how much, like down to like how much joules each round has. And we're going to test bunch of different calibers, and it's going to be sweet. And one day, this is totally impractical, I'm definitely making like a plate carrier out of the stuff just for shits and giggles. Solid bronze.
Go into the south end of Chicago.
Yeah. Or Winnipeg.
Or Winnipeg.
Or both.
Going back to Winnipeg.
Yep. And you said it was Elsite?
Yeah. E-L-C-I-T-E. Elsite. I had a friend that I talked to who came up with some of the names for these. Kind of wanted them to sound like kind of like Lord of the Rings or like fantasy type metals.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
It's got a cool ring to it.
Definitely.
Yep. I like it.
Sweet. So basically, you're in your backyard messing around with different steel components or metal components, melting them down into your crucible. And is there times where it's not stable, where things don't actually mix together? Like what happens when that occurs?
Yeah. So like I was talking about with the titanium copper earlier, the reason that I would need an induction furnace is that certain metals like titanium or zirconium, when you add them to copper and they get above 2000 degrees, they react super violently with oxygen. And it makes this almost like glassy substance in the crucible. It's really brittle. Okay. It's a pain. I've actually broken a couple crucibles because it's like so sharp and it just sticks in there and it just makes this very yucky slag. So that's where the argon comes in. The argon gets rid of it. But there's tons of formulas that I've tried that just straight up haven't worked. Some have been a little bit more catastrophic like that. And then others are just not exactly what I was going for. Like sometimes the color's a little bit too bright. Sometimes it's not corrosion resistant enough, so like it looks great, but like if you touch it with your thumb like once, there's a huge fat thumbprint on it and it gets all smudged and stuff. So
I wonder. Okay, so we're gonna have another gentleman that likes to play with metallurgy on very shortly on the show.
Is it Trooper Knives?
That yes he is on right away, but we've also got somebody else on coming up right up after him too. Spencer Sanderson is going to be joining the show, and he is a Woots guy.
Oh, nice.
Is he from Heavy Forge?
That's Heavy Forge, yep.
Yeah, I love that guy's stuff. Yeah, he's very cool. Very cool. I've sent him a few messages saying, you're the Woots man.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. I didn't know this, but with Woots, they put glass on the top of the crucible to create the airtight seal. Could you do that with your process? Would that work, or do you think the argon is absolutely necessary versus adding something like that to create a?
Honestly, I'm not sure. I have tried using glass before, but it wasn't like the special green glass that they use for Woots. I just found like an old like wine bottle in the trash, so I just kind of smashed it up and sprinkled orange on top.
What do you mean special green? Well, you know what? Tell me, what's a special green glass?
Every time that I've seen folks make Woots steel, they always use a glass with a green pigment when they cover it. I've never seen any other type of glass. I'm not sure exactly what about the glass makes it special for making Woots, but that's just kind of what folks seem to prefer. And maybe there is something to it, because I tried just clear glass and it didn't really work. It just kind of like bubbled and fused in and just was very gross.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's something we'll have to dive into with Spencer and ask him what the deal is there.
Yeah, I'd be very curious to hear what he has to say.
Man, curious and hear what all you guys have to say. This is mind-boggling information. We're just soaking it up right now, buddy. Fuck yeah. So Justin was asking, you know, the uses of these different alloys that you're making. What kind of uses are you finding that a lot of these alloys are being used for right now, or where do you see it going, other than like the armor is one thing? What else?
The armor is just more of like a fun project, but I guess one thing that I could talk about is one thing that I've been working on, especially to benefit knife makers and other craftsmen that are using my materials for making guards, pommels, bolsters, even like statues, sculptures, figurines. And that is the addition of phosphorus into some of my copper alloys.
Okay.
Now, the interesting thing about this is normally like when you're sanding copper or bronze or brass, like you're sanding it and it gets really hot really fast. Like you're sanding one half and the other half's hot. You grab it, you burn the shit out of your hand. Yeah. Not fun. So by adding specific amounts of phosphorus, usually between 0.05 and 0.3% by weight. Yeah, it's super precise, man. If I add like a single grain too much, sometimes like it's just completely fucks up the process.
Fuck, that's so crazy, yeah. Dude.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very sensitive stuff. And the addition of phosphorus, it completely changes small portions of the crystal structure of the alloys, and this in turn helps make it less thermally and electrically conductive. So when you're sanding a piece of this stuff, you're sanding, say it's like a nice little brick, and you're sanding the bottom side on a normal piece of copper, the whole piece is going to heat up at pretty much the same rate because of the extremely good electrical and thermal conductivity that copper has. But with the phosphorus additions, if you're sanding the bottom, only the bottom will stay hot and the top will stay cold. So it allows you to sand on pieces for longer and sand on pieces more safely without burning the shit out of your fingers. Because, yeah, that's happened to me a couple times. Like you're sanding on copper for like a second or two too long and the whole piece just gets hot and it just,
Oh, fuck yeah. Does that, how much does it change the conductivity of the copper?
I think, off the top of my head, with about 0.1% phosphorus, it reduces it by, I think, 35%.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, copper is like it's one of the highest conductivity metals that's out there. The only thing higher than copper is silver, and copper is it's awesome, but the problem with copper and electronics is it eventually corrodes. So that's where you'll find a lot of specialty electronics is goes towards gold, but gold actually doesn't have that good of a conductivity rate, which would probably almost match what you're saying here with the copper with the added phosphorus. But
I was going to say, I was actually a little bit too tentative in phosphor bronze, which is normally an alloy of about 5% tin and 0.3% phosphorus with balanced copper. It has a conductivity only 20% that of pure copper.
Oh, wow. Crazy. That's wow. Yeah. Crazy lower.
And so I took that concept as well as another concept in which silicon, which is another nonmetal, has a similar effect to phosphorus in terms of thermal and electrical conductivity. So by adding the both of them in very small concentrations, it doesn't change up the color or physical properties of the alloy too much, but it makes it so that the conductivity is probably about 10 to 20% that of the original material. So you can sand on it without it getting super hot. And phosphorus is really interesting stuff. It forms this crystal structure with three copper atoms and one phosphorus atom, Cu3P. And this exists in these copper alloys with phosphorus. And when these alloys corrode, unlike normal materials, they corrode the phosphorus-copper alloys. Sorry, I'm trying to explain this right.
Can you explain to me, like, so there's the different conductivities, thermal transfer. How does this differently corrode from normal copper? Because I know you were about to say it, and I was like, whoa, wait, I had to ask the question.
So the phosphorus and everything, it actually does help with the corrosion resistance. Not like a huge deal, not to the same extent as like tin or aluminum or something like that.
Yeah.
But it does provide a nice little boost. And the cool thing is, are you guys familiar with like a heat or like a flame patina on copper before, when you like you hit it with a torch and it kind of gets all like bluish and purple and like orangey and stuff?
Oh yeah.
So when you add as much as only 0.1% phosphorus to pretty much every type of copper alloy that I've seen, it will naturally corrode as if it's getting a heat patina. So it turns purple and blue after like a couple weeks sitting out in a moist environment.
Huh, interesting. That would be very cool to play with. That sounds very interesting. It's just an oxide layer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it can scratch off still.
Definitely. Yeah, it forms because of this thing, this phenomenon called thin film interference. And thin film interference is, so basically the shape of the Cu3P crystals on the surface of the metal is different. And so when the oxide layers form, the oxide layers are able to reflect light at different spectrum. So it changes the color of the patina, basically.
Hmm. Yeah. Same thing with chromium, essentially.
Maybe. I think that would work a little bit, but I don't know if I haven't ever seen any sort of like rainbow or flame patinas with chromium copper before.
Not with chromium copper, but with stainless steel, you can get the flame color to it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's the same thing. That's thin film interference right there.
So chromium copper is a thing then?
Indeed it is.
What?
There's all sorts of crazy industrial copper alloys that a lot of folks don't really know too much about. Chromium copper, it's mostly used, or sorry, chromium is mostly added to copper to make sure that it stays hard at higher temperatures. So like regular copper, you know, you start hitting it with a hammer at above 200 C and it'll start to get really soft. But with the addition of about 1% chromium, that softening temperature raises from 200 C to about 500 C.
Huh.
It has like some applications in like hot working, like dyes.
Mm-hmm. Electronics, I could see it working in certain electronics and needing to have that extra hardness.
Definitely.
Interesting. There's a lot of crossover to this for my day job, because I play a lot with electronics in my day job, so I'm kind of, I've got some brain activity going on in that direction there. It's not something that I can really talk about too much on the podcast because it's research and development. So unfortunately, I don't even know what I am actually allowed to talk about when it comes to what I do at work. But the copper has become a massive commodity in transportation in the last few years because of electrification. And, you know, it's something that I think needs a little bit more understanding on your level when it comes to some of this stuff, when it's being applied to the transportation model. Versus using just your basic, here's copper, make a copper bar out of it, right? Like there's, I'm picking up some stuff here. It's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, the possibility with copper is quite honestly, it's endless. One of the things that I'm going to start looking into that no one really does like ever is the creation of alloys with copper and metals from the lanthanide series. So stuff like neodymium, samarium, gadolinium, all sorts of stuff like that that are used in like superconductors and all sorts of very interesting technology. So I'm not sure exactly.
You keep going back to copper. Is there a reason why you do that? Is it just that copper is easy to alloy?
He's got a boner for copper, man. Come on.
That's pretty. I get it, but
it's a little bit of both. Not gonna lie. So like with steel and everything, not only is it's kind of hard to melt, you have to get it above I think like over 1400 C, probably something like that. And so the amount of energy and time it takes to melt steel is pretty great. And in addition to that, there's a lot of people out there, I mean, with good reason, that are heavily studying steel. They're trying to optimize it in every which way possible. Like some of the CPM steels, like that MagnaCut stuff that just came out, like all of these incredible super steels. And I feel like with so much attention being focused on steel and iron alloys itself, I feel like people have kind of like forgot about copper alloys and bronzes and brasses and stuff. It's like, okay, we've figured it out to a very solid extent and our knowledge of the material is awesome and it's very extensive, but it seems like we kind of hit a wall and no one's really investigating into really strange types of copper alloys, things that have never existed before that could possibly take advantage of some of the strange electrical properties of lanthanides with the electrical conductivity of copper. And, you know, who knows what could happen when those types of things are put together along with high strength materials like adding the titanium. And I think it's really just an untapped field of science. Like I don't really see too many folks studying copper metallurgy.
This kid's going places, you guys. Watch out. Yeah, How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, no, not at all. I am 24 years old, my good sirs.
Nice.
Dude. He's got the world ahead of him.
You're finishing your degree in chemistry, and what do your profs say when you, or do you talk to them about this kind of like copper metallurgy and stuff?
I do. I'm working with a professor pretty closely, actually. I was one of the guys that I would want to give a shout out to. I don't know if he'll ever be watching this, but shout out to you, Dr. Sanchev. You the man. And yeah, he's kind of been my research mentor and everything. He's been helping me design experiments to actually study some of the properties of these new alloys that I've created in a way that's more scientific than just smacking it with a hammer and saying, oh, this is much harder than the other one. I mean, I still do those kinds of tests too, but it's much nicer to get into the lab for hard data, you know?
Measurable.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you've ever sat down and had a conversation with somebody that you knew was going to be becoming a fucking doctor one day? Not just any doctor, but a doctor in freaking metallurgy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying here?
I don't think I've ever had a conversation with someone like that. I don't think I've ever met anyone like me before, but
Yeah, and I was going to say, unless you have a conversation with the mirror.
Which yeah. I do too. Yeah.
Dr. Laren Thomas is the only other guy that comes to mind, but.
Right, but we didn't get to know Dr. Laren Thomas before he was a doctor. We're getting to meet Mike Palmer before he is Dr. Palmer, dude. Like, how fucking cool is this? This is rad as fuck.
Oh, thank you so much, man. That I can't even tell you how much that means. Thank you.
So, you're going to graduate right away. Mm-hmm. What's next, buddy?
Oh, man. I got some big things planned, guys. I have some big things planned. So, with the creation of all of these cool, different colored, different functional alloys, I'm going to start making some of the bombest Makumegane in existence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking 3, 4, maybe even 5 color patterns, completely different alloys, properties that are to die for. And for you guys.
Tell me about your tool. I mean, tools.
And have you guys seen the gem bronze that I've been working on at all?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lyndon.
I probably have, but it's not.
I went through your highlights. I saw them in there. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about this gem bronze because I recently did a Kumai blade, and when I etched my copper, I also had that kind of that pattern.
Crystalline look.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The crystalline look to it, and I was like, "What the heck is this? Like, I don't get it." And I was like, "Well, I got to go to the grinder. Like, I can't. I'm filming. I got to do this. I can't inquire too much about it." But now we'll get some answers, I guess.
Oh, man. I can go pretty in-depth into that. But basically, it is a macroscopic representation of the crystal structure of the metal. And right. So what I did with gem bronze is I added a special ingredient that I unfortunately can't get into, but this special ingredient...
It's pretty small, so it'd be hard to get into.
I was waiting for something there.
But yeah, so after I added that, I made it so that it's all a single phase. So all of the crystals in there are all a single type of crystal. And from this, I allowed it to cool very slowly after I cast it. And just in general, metal crystal size in finished pieces has a lot to do with the cooling rate. So slow cooling rate will correspond to larger crystals. So by taking an alloy that is already prone to making kind of crystalline gem-like shapes in its natural crystal structure, and then allowing it to cool very slowly, you can cause these beautiful, almost like diamond dust looking gems to grow to like the size of like your pinky nail almost. And it gives it this really unique, crystallized and funky look. And due to the chemistry of it, like I was saying with the Makumegane, I've actually got a couple of alloys that all do this. And I think that I could make a 3-metal Makume with 3 different types of alloys that make gems. And I think it's going to be some crazy shit. Might even be able to laminate it around one of those titanium copper cores and make a entirely non-ferrous metal blade that's 40 HRC and is made primarily of Makumegane.
That would be absolutely rad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got some plans.
I'm so stoked because... You know, you look at this knife industry and you're like, man, it's getting to a point where it's all been done already. Like, what else can guys do? You know, you got a few guys out there. Dakota Wilson is one of the guys we brought up. I'm trying to remember. JB Blades, I believe, is another gentleman from Texas that does some fucking crazy awesome work, too.
Crazy shit.
Right? And, you know, couple of these people that are standing out, and there's guys down in Brazil that really stand out to me too, that I don't know the names of these guys because they all got crazy names, but there's some guys down in Brazil doing some crazy work, and a couple guys in Russia that are doing crazy work, and Italy and Germany, and I'm kind of following these guys through the Forge Side Chat podcast Instagram page, and I'm like, okay, so there's still more there, But what I'm seeing in North America for the most part, it seems like kind guys are kind of pigeonholed on
sticking to the tradition.
Yeah. But well, tradition has kind of turned into Damascus in North America lately. From what I've seen, it's like, you know, monosteel. The San Mai thing seems to, with the rot, that's kind of jumping out there. Have you played with wrought iron at all, dude?
What's up?
Have you played with wrought iron?
No, I haven't. I don't even really have a good, like, blacksmithing and hot working setup. And that's kind of going to be one of the things that I'm going to be investing in once I get a bigger shop soon. Never had the chance, though. But I do absolutely love the etched wrought iron stuff. There's so much character to it that I feel like you just don't get in, like, mono steel. And so,
oh, totally.
Super clean compared to all these contaminants in the steel or the iron.
One of the things that I've been kind of playing around with copper that I think you might have some fun with eventually one day is bringing steel to a forge welding temperature, applying flux, and then applying copper to it, and that copper will essentially adhere to the surface of the metal at that point. But it'll do it in spots, kind of like it gets really spotty when you do that. It doesn't. It depends how it's done. If you put enough to it, yeah, it'll fully coat it. But if you just put little spots of it, you'll get little patterns of copper. And I could see you playing with that with all these different alloys and seeing, like, you know, getting some really cool patterns going on and stuff.
No, I've never heard of that before. I'll have to look that up on YouTube or something. That seems very interesting indeed.
I figured it out on my own. I don't know if there's any YouTube videos about it at all. This was all just home experiments, and I was like, "Holy shit! Look at that! It works, eh?"
Hell yeah, dude! I'd love to see some photos of it after this is over. If you ever get a chance,
definitely. I think I've got some on my Instagram, but I'll shoot you some.
Sweet.
All right, Mike. For our listeners, they're mostly blacksmiths, bladesmiths, and they're like, I wouldn't mind getting a foundry, getting a crucible, kind of experimenting. Where would they start?
I gotta recommend the brand Devil Forge and the brand 2Auto.
Okay.
2Auto has probably some of the best and cheapest and most reliable electric kilns. They're great for starting off because you can just kind of plop one up on a tabletop somewhere, and it has all the equipment already attached. And for a nice propane powered furnace, I definitely recommend Devil Forge. They have a forge that's able to fit a 4-kilogram crucible, which is the one that I currently have, as well as all of the equipment like gloves, tongs, a crucible, a mold for like $250 American right now.
Wow.
And it is a insanely good deal. I used the Devil Forge. It's the only furnace I've really ever used. I used one probably once or twice a day, 6 days a week for 2 years before it crapped out.
Holy shit.
So, man, that thing lasted. Yeah, it paid for itself probably like 50 times over. Probably one of the best uses of money I've ever spent on.
Solid. And then, so they get hooked up, they get all this equipment. Mm-hmm. Where would you recommend they start sourcing materials to actually melt down?
That is a good question. There is a lot of different places. I think the best deal would probably be to find some sort of a scrap yard or someplace that you can go to buy like discarded metal. There's a guy on YouTube, Big Stack D Casting, who does like a lot of like scrap metal casts where he'll get like motors and engines and electronics from like trash heaps and stuff. Mm-hmm. He'll extract all like the copper out of the wires, the aluminum from the frames, and then he'll melt those. But if you don't want to deal with scrapping, there is this great company called Online Metals, and they have these things called proto boxes. And these proto boxes are basically like 10, 20, 40 pound shipments of like copper, brass, or aluminum that they get from, they make like giant pieces, like industrial stuff. So they'll take like a 20 foot pole And if there's like a half a foot left or like 15, 20 centimeters left over, they'll just kind of toss that in a box with like pieces of the same size that weighs like 10, 20, 40 pounds. And yeah, it's a great deal.
So you get like a mystery box kind of deal or?
Yeah.
Cool.
Mystery box. Yeah.
Wow. That's neat.
For
and then
most,
I want to keep going down this topic if that's
right. Yeah. I want to ask something on the same basis.
Okay, shoot.
For people buying this stuff, how do they discern whether or not the material they've received is genuinely pure copper, or you know, how do they know what it is that they're dealing with? Do they get a like? I know like for a lot of places like Maritime Knife Supply, you buy steel from them, you'll get a spec sheet with it, right? Is that something that you look for with your material purchases?
Unfortunately, that level of specs for like kind of like purchasing in bulk isn't really available.
Mm-hmm.
At least for online metals, for the copper, they generally only send copper that's at least 99.5% pure. So there's like some that have like a little bit of phosphorus or like a little bit of silver thrown in there for conductivity. But it's generally pretty pure. Whereas the brass proto boxes, those are all different types of alloys. So they could be like brasses that are for like naval applications. There could be like pipe brasses that have lead in them. There could be like all sorts of stuff. So it is.
What do you do with that? How do you discern what to do with that stuff then?
I actually don't buy brass from anyone. I just make it my own. I buy 99.9% pure copper from like a supply company, usually either Online Metals, or there's another fella that I've actually just kind of started a business relationship with that I buy his 99.9% copper offcuts. Mm-hmm. And I use pure zinc, and then I just kind of make the brass myself, since it's a lot more precise, and I can absolutely guarantee that there isn't any lead in any of the stuff that I'm working with, because I like to keep it as healthy as possible if folks are going to be, you know, touching it, sanding it and stuff.
Okay,
cool.
Offshoot now, and then I'm coming back. Brass versus bronze. You said copper, zinc for your brass.
Yeah, so brass traditionally is an alloy of primarily copper with additions of zinc, whereas bronze, that's more of like a broad category. Bronze can be, there's things like tin bronze, aluminum bronze, silicon bronze, and those are differentiated based on the prefix is assigned to the alloying element with the highest concentration. So like a tin bronze would have like more tin than any other type of alloying element, and then the rest would be mostly copper. Whereas aluminum bronze would be like aluminum would be the highest alloying element, and then copper would be the
Okay, and then your brass, is that mostly zinc with the addition of copper?
So brass is anywhere from traditionally about 5 to 40% zinc by weight, and anywhere from 95 to 60% by weight copper.
Crazy. Okay. Mm-hmm. So like, wow. Okay. So if you're buying bronze, it could be very different from a different bronze because of the zinc content.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. With
how does that affect the bronze then?
How does what affect the bronze? Like how does the
like
different
does, yeah does it change it somehow?
Yeah. Oh, big time. Yeah. Like, for example, if it was a type of tin bronze instead of a type of silicon bronze, the color, conductivity, corrosion resistance, tensile strength, yield strength, hardness, all of these would be significantly different. Yeah. Because it's like when you add different elements into copper, it changes the crystal structure of the material at a fundamental level. And these fundamental changes in crystal structure are what correspond to different physical and mechanical properties. If that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
cool. Yeah. Yeah. From. Yeah. And if you're confused as a listener listening to this, Dr. Laren Thomas's book, Knife Engineering, talks about it. Knife Steel Nerds online has a lot of good information. Right. His website, or sorry, his YouTube is fantastic as well. Sometimes he'll like really nerd out into different types of steel and whatnot, and processes, and yeah. So the crystalline structure is definitely something that, with a bit of experience in knife making, you can start to understand a little bit for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, if you guys have any questions on all the crazy shit that I'm talking about, I'll do my best to try to explain things as best I can, but I do tend to get a little bit ahead of myself. So if you guys, if I'm skipping something or if you guys are confused, just, you know, raise a hand, let me know. I'll be happy to go back and collect myself.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah. And that is at Mike's_metalworking on Instagram.
That's so me.
Shoot some messages. All right. So I'm going to go back to a noob who just got himself the Devil Forge. He's got his crucible. He's got some scrap yard copper, aluminum. He wants to experiment a little bit. Danger, precautions. What should someone be doing to be like, you know, I'd like to not burn myself, not poison myself, get the beryllium lung or anything like that. So
yes, those are all good goals to have.
Yeah, yeah, you want to be safe. You want to do this for a long time.
Yes, this is for a long time, not a good time. So I guess one of the primary things is to be aware of what you're melting. And I'd say that's paramount. Because certain materials, like the chromium copper or the beryllium copper that we were talking about,
you won't even know it.
You won't be able to tell. So if at all possible, try to get your stuff from as verified of a source as you can. And yeah, sorry. So yeah, make sure you know what you're melting. And another reason for that is when you're melting brass of any kind, any type of brass, anything that has zinc in it, when zinc is heated above, I think, in Celsius, that would be like...
It could be Fahrenheit.
Yeah, over like 1600 Fahrenheit. I should know these in Celsius. Celsius is better. and so when it's heated over that temperature, it actually begins to boil, as in the metal will boil into a gas.
Right.
And this gas, zinc gas, will react with the oxygen in the air, creating zinc oxide. And this zinc oxide is still probably about 300-400 degrees C when it's coming up into the air. So if you're melting zinc, or if you're melting brass and you breathe this stuff in, you're going to poison the shit out of yourself.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Good to know.
So yeah.
Shit you see floating through the air if you ever throw something that was galvanized in the forge.
Yep, that is zinc oxide. I call it danger cotton candy. Because sometimes in the crucible, when if I overheat it a little bit, it forms like this, like a perfect cotton candy bowl.
What's the actual saying with that? It's like danger, Mister something. No,
danger. Mister Robinson.
That's what I want. That's what I wanted to say was Mister Robinson as well. Danger, Mister Robinson. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh no, it's like on the tip of my tongue. I know what you're talking about. But,
yeah. Weird. That's how my brain works.
Okay, just like so brass is scary. Anything containing zinc is scary, and your brass has your zinc. Like burning. What should we do?
Yeah,
like you're handling are you handling liquid steel? Like I saw on your Instagram, you're pouring coins. You're pouring different little. Sculptures or whatnot. How,
you know, wait, what, before you dive into this, one of the things that we really need to bring up, and I wanted to bring this up a little while ago because you were talking about the forges, all of this stuff that you need to do this stuff, it's available on maritimeknifesupply.ca. Lawrence carries tongs, forges, anvils, heat treating kilns. We can save you $100 on heat treating kilns using the code FSC kiln. Dude, just head over to maritimeknifesupply.ca. And it's Black Friday right now. He's got sales going on till Monday. He just made a deal. He's the Canadian representative for Broadbrick 2x72, dude, is absolutely slaying the game when it comes to retail for the knife making supply game. Just absolutely slaying it. I love Lawrence and everything he does. Yeah. And Mike,
grinders, man, that's awesome.
You're in the States, so you get to save with the crossover, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Princess Wide. Auto, I think, has the Crucibles. So
they do, yeah. That's where I got mine was Princess Auto. They don't have foundries, but really a foundry like for melting copper, you can do copper in your forge. You don't need a foundry for copper. So And brass and aluminum, it all work in your forge. As long as your forge is big enough to fit
brass, you'll kill yourself with zinc.
Well, you do brass outside.
Mm-hmm. That was the next thing that I was going to get into is that it is it's very doable to melt brass. I do it all the time, but I make sure that I wear a respirator when I'm outside doing it. I make sure that I'm in a well ventilated area. And while wearing the respirator, if I'm checking on the metal and like getting close to the furnace at all, I'll just kind of hold my breath before I get close to it. So I'll be like,
snorkel.
Kind of check it out. And then as soon as
equivalent of
breathe again,
equivalent of squinting your eyes.
I was thinking more Bob and Doug McKenzie when they're like underwater and they're like drinking the air out of the beer bottles to survive.
Nice, well played reference, dude. Oh shit, he's having another beer because it's Canada and that's what we do. We drink the beer and we smoke our smokes.
Oh yeah, we're gonna go pound a couple of brewskis, eh?
Oh, 2-4.
Excellent. All right. I feel I can do this safely now.
Yeah. Yeah, but just make sure to wear thick clothing. Leather works great. Just basically a lot of the same precautions that you'd take if you were forging out a blade or just working with anything that's really hot. Closed-toed shoes. That's a big no yes. You don't want to spill molten metal on your foot. Haven't done that, but I can't imagine it's particularly fun.
No. So this is an interesting take on this. I wouldn't recommend tying your boots so tight that they aren't able to just slip off. If you get molten metal in your shoe, the first thing you want to do is get that fucking shoe off, man.
Yes, that has happened to me. If any of you guys have seen my Instagram stories, I'm sure there have been times where I've worn the shoes that have a giant burn hole in the front. Thankfully, they're like slip off. So like, there was, I was doing some experimenting and I put a piece in that had a lot of air bubbles and it just started spewing like tiny droplets here and there. That's only happened like once or twice. It was very poor quality metal. And a couple of them got on my foot. And so I just like ripped my shoe off and then thankfully didn't get hurt, didn't get burned, but that's like the closest I've come to any sort of injury doing this. And I've worn leather boots since.
I just thought of something. In Canada, somewhat in the United States, there's a couple of the northern states that will have to worry about this as well, but more so Canadian-wise, throwing ice-cold metal into the foundry.
Oh, yeah. That's not a good idea.
Yeah, bad news bear right
why
there.
Why is that?
The moisture content in the steel will cause an explosion.
Really?
Yeah, like if I had like a pot full of molten copper and I threw in a piece of cold zinc to make some brass, that shit would...
Wow.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of throwing a wet turkey in the turkey fryer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the reason I bring that up is Florida Man Forge just posted a video on how to properly deep fry a turkey for Thanksgiving. So thank you, Justin, for posting that and making me think of Canada. Eh?
He's doing the Lord's work there, keeping people safe.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good. He's a good man.
I'd imagine full face shield as well is recommended.
It is recommended. I sometimes I could probably be a little bit more careful with facial protections. I just have my respirator, and then I have some goggles on.
I've seen a guy do it in freaking t-shirt, man. Like, I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
I would too.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably not his first time, right? Like, he's probably done it 100 times. He's never had any issues. He knows what he's doing. And he's confident.
Yeah, like, in the summer, knowledgeable. I wear shorts in the summer, actually, because when you're pouring, like, brass or bronze or copper, it's so hot that if it were to touch your skin, it would instantly boil a layer of your skin and it would bounce off of you, something known as the leaving frost
effect. Yeah.
So, like, if you, like, sprinkle water on, like, a penny or, like, a really hot penny or something and it kind of dances a little bit, it's the same effect. It's a steam barrier, only it would be vapor generated by the molten metal, like, super boiling your flesh. So you'd be fine. If you want to look it up, there's guys that, like, I think there's this video in Russia of this guy. There's a big, like, stream of, like, steel slag, and he was just with his hand, and it was
slapped it.
I saw that.
There's also the guy that claims to forge blades with his bare hand.
Yeah, the guy who's like, gets it wet and then
stomps it.
Yeah, it's like, sure, buddy.
I think if you did it right, scientifically speaking, that would work.
Scientifically, yeah, but the amount of pressure that you're able to implement with your hand.
Yeah, I meant work as in, like, you wouldn't touch it. Like, burn your hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how well it would work for the forging and stuff, but the guy's got to have some balls to do that, regardless of how well it works.
Are you planning on doing any blacksmithing? Is that something, like, do you make knives right now, dude?
Interestingly enough, I used to do, like, stock removal knife making back when I was, like, in high school, when I was, like, 13 to, like, 22-ish and stuff.
You're in the area of Kyle Daly, Daly Knives.
Kyle Daly.
H. Daly Knives. He runs Knife Perspective. Podcast, and he's in Chicago, I believe, as well. So, and he's cool. He's a straight up dude.
I'll have to look him up. Yeah,
so look him up. Cool. Yeah, definitely.
What was his name again?
KH Daly Knives. Yeah, and to other listeners too. Solid podcast.
Oh hell yeah!
Found him.
Very good. Sweet. I like them. What are the Down Under guys? Sam Towns, and what's their podcast called?
The Forge Cast.
The Forge Cast. There's some great information in that podcast too.
Oh, hell yeah. I messaged them because they do a thing on their show. At the beginning, they bring up Song of the Week. Right. And I messaged them, said, how would you guys feel if we did a similar take on our show where we mentioned our song of the week and maybe eventually we created our own YouTube playlist or something like that? Or maybe the reason I brought it up is I was talking to the guy that actually does the YouTube playlist. Yeah, mixtapes are great. Love mixtapes. But I haven't gotten a response from them yet, and I don't want to go steal their thunder. Like, that's their jam, dude. That's their thing. And, I got so many weird vibes lately because freaking Fader, dude, on Knife Talk went off, like, more than one episode about all these Fleabag podcasts. They just copy us, and they can't keep up to us doing once a week and blah 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 blah. Ever since I heard that stuff, and I've heard other podcast guys talk about, you know, like Water Under the Bridge,
I want to see you listening to Knife Talk and be like, he's talking to me. I just want to see your face of like, I'm the Fleabag.
No,
you need a t-shirt that says Fleabag.
Fleabag podcast. I was talking to Jason Hartwell about that, and Jason Hartwell's pretty sure that he's the Fleabag.
He's the and Fleabag.
Yeah, after I listened to the Jeff Fader going off about it, I was like, I actually right out loud was like, yeah, you're the Fleabag, Jason. and eating on the on air and all sorts of just like, I don't know. He's not doing his show anymore, eh?
No, no. He's, yeah, they got Ryan Copley's with
Blomberg.
Nice. Yeah. You know, that happened, what, a couple months ago now? Not even?
Not quite a couple, but yeah, it happened at least a month ago for sure now.
I just have not been listening to podcasts as much as, like, before I'd put one on and put it on another and another and another until they were all consumed, and then I'd start listening to audiobooks, and now I just sit in front of my computer screen and just edit all day.
Yeah, you can't do both at the same time. You need the concentration level. I know that. Yeah. I run into that at work. Like, some jobs I do at work, I don't need that concentration level, so I pop in the earbud and I can go. Problem right now, ear infection, buddy. I haven't been able to listen to anything for a fucking week besides my 15-minute drive to work and 15-minute drive home.
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah, so I've got a little bit of work for it. Those guys are on the top of my list. Brian House is special to me. I've got a lot of love for them, so they're on the top of the list. One of the other shows that I've recently acquired that I've put up to the top of the list is the Welders Business Podcast. I believe that's what it's called, the Welding Business Podcast.
Okay.
Because, well, you know me, I'm a welder first, right? Before blacksmith. Yeah. Cool. And I'm at a point now where I've combined the two strongly. I believe that my welding is only, it's a bonus to have the blacksmithing. My blacksmithing, it's only a bonus to have the welding. They complement each other, right. Hugely, right? In fact, I'm at the point where if you're a blacksmith and you don't know how to weld, you're doing yourself a disservice. And if you're a welder and you don't know about blacksmithing, you're also doing yourself a disservice, because there is so much to learn about iron that a lot of blacksmiths don't know, dude. It's insane.
So that's back and forth, vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah. Welding Business Owners Podcast is the show that I've been listening to. And it's pretty good, because some of the guys that have been the first round of guests on his show were artistic welders. So there's that crossover for blacksmiths, right? Yeah. You're muted right now.
I was going to say, like, episode 40, my last episode, I still didn't have my welder. And over the summer, I did get a welder.
Ooh.
I got myself. Yeah. You know, it's one of those.
Tell me about your
Amazon ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me more.
M1600. It came recommended by Mr. Pickle Cutters. He's like, this is the one I bought, and it's good. I like it. So I looked it up, picked it up when it was Prime Days. But when I placed my 220-volt breaker, I put it on the same phase, so it was not working, and I couldn't figure out why until I decided to get another welder, plug it in, and it was not working. And then I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, no. Well, at least you have two welders now?
No, I returned the other one right away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, okay, this one's going back. Shit, $60 lesson on shipping or whatever, but so be it.
Ouch.
As soon as I plugged it in, I was like, oh, hang on. Oh, I know what's going on. Damn.
Oh, shit.
But in acquiring that, the reason why I went with that welder was because you can do the it's multi-function or multi-purpose.
Yeah, multi-function.
Multi-function. So MIG, TIG, and ARC as well.
Oh,
so I have. So haven't
does it
tried the
come
ARC
with? It comes with all three whips.
No, it comes with your MIG and your ARC. I had to buy the TIG.
Okay.
And then I had to buy the bottles to get the CO2.
The argon and the CO2
as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But damn, fuck, that gives a nice weld compared to like my shitty one that I used to have. My
hot damn,
my 120 volt flux core, just smoky and gross, and now it's like, man, this is clean. And yeah, big difference. Very happy.
You gotta start playing around with the TIG welder on different alloys. Does that, can it do AC? I bet you that's why it's so cheap, is it doesn't do AC welding, I bet.
Yeah, you can't weld like aluminum or anything.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So the one,
the second one that I bought, I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna spend a little bit more. And I did buy one that could have done that, but then I decided to be a little bit more thrifty and keep the old one that doesn't, which was less expensive. Get rid of the
new one. Well, see, the thing that having AC on your machine is nice for is that when you can start getting into welding different alloys like brass and bronze and
So you copper. you need an AC current to do that, like non-ferrous metal welding?
That's right.
Okay, I will definitely keep that in mind, as I also am going to be needing a welder sooner or later. So.
There you go, bud.
Definitely.
And you'll want to get yourself a TIG welder and a bottle of argon and then start playing around with what types of tungsten you need for the different types of metal, because different tungstens will work. And you know, some of them you need to have filler rod. Some of them I find that you can get away without filler rod. I've been playing around with adding copper to stainless steel. It's a process that I pushed a company to start doing, and now they're doing it all the time from what I see.
Awesome. Like, is it like a plating or something, or is it like
Fusion. It's a fusion process. Yeah. The copper fuses into the stainless steel at the right temperature with the right process. And the thing that I found with that is it is very finite with the temperature that you use too hot, and the copper will short crack on you. Mm-hmm. You're also having to make sure that your materials are extremely clean prior to, there's no powder flux or anything like that's used, but you have to have a good argon coverage as well. What was the other thing I was going to say with it? Oh, and the odd thing that I found with that is it's not on AC, because stainless steel will not weld properly on AC. Stainless steel requires DC. So for whatever reason, like copper, you have to use, I found for TIG welding straight copper to copper, it required me to use AC. When I did copper to stainless, I used DC, and the copper man held it no problem. But it wouldn't work on copper to copper for some reason. At least, I'll have to play with that again, because it's been a while. But
is it just the heat from the stainless that's melting the copper?
It's a good possibility. That's got something to do with it. And that's one of the things that you have to, if I remember correctly, you want to focus your heat more on the stainless than you do on the copper, so that the copper doesn't burn away as bad. Because if you focus, the copper will melt faster than the stainless will, right? Yeah, right. It makes sense. So
I've got one more topic I want to dive into.
Your topic of the week?
Topic of the week? Topic of the moment, possibly.
I'll tell you what my topic of the week was, okay, Jose, because that was my idea.
Cut me off.
Well, that was my idea, okay, Jose. So my topic of the week, is like goaltenders, and like they're out there saving all those other guys' lives. And you know what? Some guys, they have that appreciation for the goaltender, right? When you're playing hockey, you got to have appreciation for your goaltender, And if you don't have appreciation for your goaltender, that's a bad team. And I don't cheer for that team. I cheer for the team that has appreciation for their goaltender. That's my topic of the week,
I can get behind that. I can get behind that. Got to respect the man in the net.
Definitely. What was your topic of the week there, Jose?
You know, soccer. Canada's in the soccer worlds, but that's not my topic. Right. It just made me think of that. They played Belgium today and they lost, but damn, they put on a good show. I watched.
Belgium's a top-notch team.
Yeah, but Canada was in front of their net way more, and shots on goal was like triple, quadruple for Canada. So
it's like shot, 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 shot.
Not quite, but yeah. Yeah. All right. So you've got this melted alloy, melted copper. I'm new again. I'm not sure what I'm doing. What do I do with it? What do I pour it into? Can I make a mold out of just beach sand, squeaky sand from Chicago, up Lake Erie? What can I do?
So there's a couple different things you can use to actually pour the metal into. There's pre-made ingot molds, which are typically graphite or cast iron, and both of those work really well. I prefer graphite just because I like some of the shapes and the pre-made ingot molds that they come in. And another type of casting medium that you can pour into is this stuff called green sand. And it is a mixture of traditional silica sand, about 70% and 30% clay. So you can use special types of kitty litter, actually. Okay. And there's instructional guides and everything online about like exactly how much of kitty litter to like aquarium sand to add. You mix them together with a little bit of water and they form this type of sand that's able to capture very fine detail. And you can pour molten metal into it, and the water content's just right. It won't like explode or any problems. But there's another really wonderful material that's kind of pre-made. It's called Petrobond sand.
Okay.
And you know, Petro, it's an oil-based sand, and it's red, and it's able to capture details up to like a millimeter, just like super fine stuff. Yeah, it's great. It's about, I think it's like $30 for 5 kilos of the stuff. So it's not, you know, it's not terribly expensive. It's not cheap by any means, but the quality of the cast is going to be much, much better than any sort of green sand mixture that you can make at home. So it's like, it's like a price, it's like a quality versus quantity type of thing for the sand. But yeah, they both work great. And if you're just screwing around at home, casting ingots and little trinkets and stuff, then green sand will work perfect.
I've been curious with that kind of stuff. Like, I've wanted to do some casting of my own. When you make a sand mold like that, is it reusable over and over again? Is it a one-time use?
With Petrobond, after it's been heated up, the oil kind of burns off and it's dried out. So there's a process that you can do to reuse it, but unless you kind of revitalize the Petrobond sand, it gets used up. And I haven't really worked too much with green sand, but I think if you just scrape away the burned parts from the inside of the mold and use the leftover sand that hasn't been superheated, or maybe even just add some more water into it, it's probably good to go again. So, yeah, they're both reusable, but rejuvenating Petrobond is a pain in the ass from everyone that I've heard about it from.
And what is the stuff they use on the Man at Arms YouTube channel where they're, like, pouring more jewelry-type parts? It looks like more of a blaster of sorts.
Oh yeah, that's called lost wax or lost PLA casting. So, like, you can get like a wax or like a 3D printed plastic model of an object, and you encase it in plaster, wait for the plaster to cure, turn it upside down, burn out the wax or the plastic so that there's a perfect cavity in the exact shape of the wax
so
object.
You melt it out ahead of time. Okay.
Yeah. I thought the stuff that you pour in was what melted the wax out for you.
Yeah, I thought it just vaporized as it
That works too. Some people do that too, where actually I think I might have misspoken with the name of it, but where was I? Yeah, there is a type of casting that if you take like a styrofoam usually or wax, and then you encase that in sand on the sides, and then you can kind of pour that into there, and it'll eat away at the foam or wax or whatever, and then the sand will kind of reinforce it too. And that's more commonly done. But on Man-at-Arms, with all of their amazing equipment, they have like all the best tools, and it works really well. You just kind of torch it and just pour it on out.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. I'm out of questions.
Interesting. That's freaking mind blowing here, dude. I don't know what else to go on here because I'm just like enthralled with all the information I've had to absorb here. The Twiller linseed oil, we haven't brought them up. That's what else we have to do. Motherfuck. Dawson, he's gonna freaking he's gonna say something to me one day. I almost dropped the ball on him last week and Lawrence this week.
Oh man.
Last thing again, man. Sorry, Dawson.
Take your notes, dude.
Well, yeah. I just get too I get too juiced up on the conversation there, buddy.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is fucking amazing stuff. But the Twitter linseed oil is also amazing stuff, and we can save you 10% on orders $50 or more if you use the code ForgeChat10. You can head over to thetwillerlinseed.com, and he's got some amazing products. The flax wax is something I highly recommend. The Lin Shield is a new product that is super awesome. These are coat your wood, preserve your wood, preserve your steel. Works great on bare steel. Just coat your bare steel with linseed oil. Preserve your steel that way. He's got a deck coating that he does.
I did go on to one of his lives this week. And he's working on paints as well, so adding pigments to his linseed oil, so that
this guy—that was my idea.
That was your idea.
Well, I watched it too. Yeah.
Sorry.
The paint wasn't my idea.
No, it's not Dakota.
Dawson
stealing Lyndon's ideas.
You telling everybody was my idea.
No way.
Yeah, it was. I watched that live.
Shout out.
I watched that.
You
live
watched
too,
it? No, you didn't.
I was there like too. Yeah,
three people watching it.
Yeah, that was me and you, eh?
maybe.
Okay.
My shout out. I'm gonna shout out Brigham Kendall. The last couple knives that he put out looked really nice, and yeah, that's my shout out. Check him out. He's cool. I saw him starting as a bladesmith, and now he's at this point, and it's like, oh, nice work.
I thought of a shout out. There's a guy that I purchased the coolest historical coin molds from. He machines them from graphite, and he's probably got like 50, probably like 50 different types of historical coins in the form of coin molds. His name on Instagram is Timeless Foundry.
Sweet.
Timeless Foundry. That's all one word. He's got an Etsy shop. He's also doing a little bit of a Black Friday sale right now. I think it's like 20% off and free shipping. Like seriously, like no joke, the coolest, best graphite coin molds in the game. If you guys are looking to like cast some stuff that looks like it came out of like a Roman treasure chest or something, he is your man.
I'm going to take this little tidbit and I'm going to approach him and be like, dude, we've got an ad run that we want to do for you every week. We'll play that little bit that you just did there for him. And he'll be like, well, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, no, he's Jonathan's a great guy. He actually designed my company logo too. He computer designed it. I had another friend draw like a physical copy of it and stuff. And so, yeah. Huge respect to him. He's a really talented guy. He's a nice fella too. I love working with him.
Great.
Awesome. That was a great shout out, dude. I love it. Like that's not just shouting out somebody that does awesome work, but it's a shout out that a lot of people are going to gravitate towards going and checking this guy's stuff out, man, because they're going to be interested in buying from him for sure.
I really hope so, man. Yeah. Hope I can help him out and stuff. Yeah.
So, hey, I heard about the guy that got a small dick and he sounds like an owl.
Oh man, is there a punchline coming? I'm trying to think of one.
I'm drawing a blank here too.
Well played, boys. Well played, boys. Well played.
Good job. There's a few people out there listening that are probably like,
who are you talking about?
That took me a second, man. Oh,
excellent. Awesome. Lyndon, what else, buddy?
I've shouted out enough people. I think we're solid on that, man. Work for it podcast, go check them out. Business podcast, check them out. Arc Junkies podcast, check them out. CWB podcast, I was on them not that long ago. Go check them out. Shout out to my boys. Much love. Yep. So, thank you everybody for joining us.
It's a great community. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Like all these people supporting each other.
I feel like I'm the, what do you call the intermediate guy between blacksmithing and welding right now in the Canadian scene. I'm like the guy that's going to bring us all together.
You're like, come on.
Yeah. I'm like, well.
You're going to bring a few out to Can Iron this year?
Well, there's a few in that area that, yeah. See if we can get Alicia to come out there, maybe.
I wonder, like, in relation to Chicago, how far away Can Iron is.
How far is Toronto from Chicago?
Winnipeg.
It's not too bad. I think it's maybe only like, it's less than 5 hours, for sure less than 5 hours by car.
Fergus would only be four then, because I think Fergus is south of Toronto.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. Wait, is I'm trying to think. Toronto's not on the west coast, is it?
No, it's Toronto's on the center peninsula there.
That's right. Yeah. Sorry, I got mixed up with another
city. You're thinking of Vancouver, eh?
That's
the Canucks. Yeah, that's where shit gets real crazy. If they don't win the Stanley Cup, or if they do win the Stanley Cup, it doesn't matter. They just riot. Actually, I think that happens in almost every Canadian city, doesn't it?
It's almost an 8-hour drive there, Mike. Ooh.
8 hours of drive.
Okay. Yeah. But we'll be doing like 20-odd hours.
But dude, this guy's connection to the blacksmithing community, man. Like, I wish we could see a demo from him or something. Hey, like, how cool would that be?
What do you mean a demo? Like, what'd you have in mind? Perhaps I could work on something like that. I'm always looking for new ideas.
Well, dude, I think you've got the ability to create a YouTube channel that is unlike anything anybody else can do right now because of your knowledge. You need to show people what you're doing, man. How to do what you do, what you're doing. Talk about the science behind it. Don't give away your secrets yet, obviously, right? But dude,
was that,
man,
phosphorus?
I think
that
you,
was phosphorus.
A little bit of special phosphorus spice.
A little bit of special
pixie dust and unicorn piss.
Yeah, pretty much, man. Pretty much. But yeah, now that I'm going to be graduated soon, I'm not going to have any classes or any like mandatory research projects. So I'll have like so much free time, a little bit too much free time perhaps. So I think a YouTube channel would be a very good use of that time. So
and get together with people like Spencer and Troopa and
I'd love to do some collabs with those guys. I sent Troopa some 40% silver Shibuichi. If you guys have ever heard of that stuff before, it is an ancient copper alloy that was used in feudal Japan a lot for the fittings of katana, like hibakis, subas, things like that. It's usually like 5 to 40% silver, and it just has these beautiful rose gold colors. It looks almost exactly like 14-karat rose gold at like 5% silver, and then this like beautiful kind of like 18 karat pink gold color, more of like the 20% silver, and it's really fun. So I've heard of it
because I was on your Instagram, Mike.
Yeah, so I sent Troopa a little piece of that, and so I'm pretty stoked to see what he does with that. But
I've got one last shout out, and this is directed straight to Mr. Palmer, Dr. Wootz. Kyle Metzloff.
All right.
Wootz.
Is he the guy that was at Black Dragon Forge?
That's right.
Yeah. Neil.
That's right. Neil's place. That's right. That,
in Canada.
That is. That's where we got.
Can Iron.
No, Can Iron.
Can Iron?
Yeah. That's hilarious. I was like,
Niels,
I've tried to remember where I've met this guy from or how that I know of him.
Yeah.
But he's not from South Africa. He's from Michigan area, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh.
Yeah.
No shit.
This is why I'm like, look, you need to look this guy up. And I've got him lined up to come on the show as well soon, I think, if I can get him to correspond with me on that one here. But we're working on it.
I sent the invite.
Very cool.
He just needs to respond to my last message. It seems to take him a couple days here and there every once in a while to respond. So,
not everyone's on their Instagram all the time. So,
yeah. Gentlemen. Before we wrap things up, guys, I just wanted to say, yeah, thank you so much for having me on here. Never been on anything like this before. It was a wonderful experience. It's been great meeting with you and just talking with you guys. I'd love to come back on the show again if you ever want to have me.
Oh,
me too.
Yeah. I'll come back on the show too.
It was awesome, Mike. I had a blast. Learned a lot.
Fuck yeah.
Thank you. Glad to hear it.
Nope. You're an awesome guest, dude. And I thank you very much for having the time put aside to come and talk with us, dude. Like,
of course.
Awesome. Thank you. And Justin, man.
On that note.
Well, thank you for showing up as well, bud.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, you're welcome.
Psst, I love you. Have another beer.
Yeah,
eh?
Yeah, no kidding.
Awesome. Good day.
Good day.
We do a little
so after show, sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's whispered. I feel like,
yeah,
I invented that on episode 40.
Was that you? Was that, yeah, where that came from?
Definitely.
I think that happened on Work For It podcast before us, though.
I think so.
No, it was us.
No, that was we started,
and they stole it from us.
Whiskey induced.
That's right.
I was like, 40th episode. Here's my 40 ouncer. Woohoo! Are you drinking at all? No, I'm not drinking at all.
This is why I miss you.
Have a
dude.
Couple zips.
Nick gets on the show and he's all like, Lando, you're being an idiot. You need to straighten your act up. And then you're just like fucking a drunken mess. And it's like, oh, this is easy. I'm joking. You're the most
the
gathered.
Last time I come on here.
You're the most gathered drunk person I know. It's actually my brother-in-law. Fuck.
Had a beer and a half.
Is marijuana legal in Michigan, bud?
In Michigan, I it might be actually. I know it's for sure legal in Illinois, but I think it might be legal in Michigan too.
Oh,
it's
right, not, yeah, Chicago, Illinois. Wisconsin,
yeah, it's for sure not legal in Wisconsin. So I know some of my buddies from high school, they got a little bit of trouble with that when they went across state lines. So,
oh shit,
yeah, unfortunate indeed.
Wisconsin. That's where that guy Charlie Behrens is from, Wisconsin, hey? The good old Midwest, eh? Where everybody says, ope.
Ope. Oh, God. Yeah, I'm totally guilty of that. Like, you crash into someone just like, ope, sorry.
Did you see B. Cohn crashed his van? And I can't remember who it was. Like, I think it was Darren from Stormlight commented on it, said, I bet you said ope.
Yeah, she probably did.
Poor Brian.
I know.
I was on one of his lives this week. He was saying he went to go look at a house and it was just, yeah, problem after problem after problem.
What happened to the
getting bought up so quickly? And
I wonder what happened to that house that he was looking at that had the full setup, shop setup. Oh, he was talking about that on the show and he was like, dude, this house is like everything we need. It's got a full, like, blacksmith shop with everything in it, like a power hammer.
Blacksmith shop.
A actual blacksmith shop. What? Was already there, yeah, with a power hammer and a, yeah, milling machine and all this other, cool, stuff.
That's something I bought over the summer too, guys. I bought a power hammer.
Yeah, with that 25. Are you using it? Last time you talked to me, you hadn't used
okay.
it.
Okay, So it had a half horsepower on there motor, which was not enough. So I put a 1 horsepower on there, but there now my 1 horsepower motor is overheating on it. So I need to swap it out. I want to find a 3 horsepower, 2 horsepower.
Oh yeah.
I've got a few motors at my place, man. Come by and grab a motor.
I'll be there in half an hour. See you on Friday.
Actually, I have to run to the pharmacy and pick up my... So that apparently this ear infection I've got is actually a really bad ear infection. I went and saw my actual family doctor today. The second he looked in my ears, like, whoa, dude, what the fuck? And I was like, man, I went and saw the walk-in like a week ago, and she like didn't even think I had much of an ear infection. She thought it was kind of like meh. And she gave me like antibiotic ear drops for it, but they're not doing fuck all for me. He's like, no, you don't need ear drops. You need fucking antibiotic pills. And
yeah, you need a full course, bro.
Yeah. Wow.
So the freaking pharmacy's like, yeah, it'll be a 3-hour wait for your prescription. Oh, guess I'll be back after the podcast. Thanks.
That sucks.
I got to run there. Yeah, it's been killing me, dude. I'm just like...
I can imagine. That's awful, man.
And it hits me in waves, too. Like, I'll feel totally fine, and all of a sudden, just like, oh! I'm a zombie. Yeah. It sucks.
I wish you a speedy recovery in that case, my man.
Oh, thanks, guys. Appreciate that. I wish myself a very speedy recovery, too. I was hoping it would be done right now and I'd be back to normal. Cool. And now I have to, I think with these pills, I'm not supposed to drink. So this was like my last drink for 10 days now. Frick.
Yeah, antibiotics and alcohol definitely do not mix. So good thinking there.
I'm looking forward to the biome change in my gut that I'm about to experience. Never goes well with antibiotics.
Oh, no.
Ugh. Nah, just destroys me, man. It's like...
Yeah, they're real funky. They're not discriminate. They go after the good bacteria, the bad bacteria.
Yeah, they're like, fuck you, everything. We're here to kill.
Mike the scientist.
You know what,
have a good night, guys.
Yeah, sounds good. It's like I said, it was a pleasure talking with you guys. I look forward to doing this again at some point. And best wishes to both of you.
Awesome.
Cheers. Have a good one.
I love you.
I love you.